I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. This is the first episode I've recorded in 2024, so I imagine it's going to be coming out sort of tail end of January, but I should take this opportunity to say Happy New Year. Thanks ever so much for all of your support in 2023, and I look forward to bringing you some amazing pod chats in 2024. If this is your first time listening to the podcast, welcome. You're very, very late to the party. There's over 500 episodes, and they're all available for free wherever you get your podcasts. So head over and subscribe. That's the best thing to do, and then you won't miss out, because I've been really blessed over the years to have spoke to so many incredible people. And today is going to deliver, because not only is it a returning guest, it's a fantastic guest. It's Frank Carter. And I interviewed Frank pre-lockdown, I think, on a very early episode of this podcast, and it was so nice to catch up with him and to hear what a great place he's in at the moment. And we talk about so much on this episode today. Frank's an absolute, just a lovely, lovely guy, and you're in for a real treat with this one. So when you get to the end of today's chat, why not go back and compare Frank's picks to what he chose, you know, a fair few years back now. And then while you're back there, then go and explore that back catalogue, because if you like your rock and roll, then you can hear my chats with the Foo Fighters, you can hear my chats with, oh gosh, the Vaccines, the Killers, the Kaiser Chiefs. We speak about Prophets of Rage on this episode. A fantastic story from Frank about one of their gigs. Go check out my chat with Chuck D of Public Enemy. That's a wonderful, wonderful natter. Whenever I get to this point in the intro where I try and rattle off the guests we've had, I always completely draw a blank. We talk about madness on this podcast. I've had Bedders on the podcast from Madness. I've had Chrissy Boy from Madness on the podcast as well. They're great chats. So I'm just thinking off the top of my head. I should have a big list in front of me, really, so I don't just rattle off the same names every time. Anyway, I'm waffling. So go check out that back catalogue. And if you'd like to support the podcast, it's really easy. There's a few ways you can do it. You can just nudge your mate and just go, there's this 50-year-old geezer from Essex with a lisp that gets overexcited talking to fantastic people about records. You can do that. You can subscribe, as I mentioned a moment ago. Or better still, you can become a Patreon. Now, that Patreon thing, you pay monthly for that. Now, I'm aware that, you know, this country's in an absolute shitstorm at the moment, so I'll keep it nice and simple. It's $1 a month. So I think it works out about, I don't know, 80 pence. For that, you can watch all the episodes. I release all the episodes on Patreon as videos, so you can go and watch my chat with Frank. And you also get access to loads and loads of kind of radio shows that I've recorded, loads of unreleased episodes. But you also get to come to the monthly Zoom hangout, which is great. Such a beautiful bunch of people all get together once a month for a completely non-judgy chat. And we just have a little, and we release it. You can go and have a, if you look through the archive, you can go and listen to a couple of them. They're really nice, sort of warm affairs where we just have a lovely little chat about whatever subject we pick. And it's really nice. So you can come along, and it's your opportunity to get your voice on Off the Beat and Track. Okay. Well, look, I've waffled on for way too long now. Everything you need to know is on offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. That's beat and not beaten. And we're on all the socials. I'd probably suggest Instagram is the one that I'm most active on. So so go give us a follow over there and keep up to speed with everything that we're up to. Anyway, please enjoy Off the Beaten Track podcast with the delightful Frank Carter.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Frank, how you doing?
I'm very well. I'm actually a bit sick at the minute, but I'm apart from that, I'm good. I'm good. I'm just a bit run down, you know.
I appreciate you giving up the time, mate, for that.
No, it's all good.
Well, I'll be gentle with you today, mate, and we're going to talk about some lovely records. So I'm sure we'll have a nice time, mate. I mean, you've been on this podcast. I met you at the Queen of Hoxton in Shoreditch pre-lockdown, and we had a chat in the basement at the Queen of Hoxton a long time ago. So it's nice to have you back on the podcast, and I'm looking forward to chatting about some of these tunes with you. How you been apart from the current illness?
Yeah, I've been all right, man. Life has been dramatic, you know, as it has for all of us for the past sort of three or 4 years. But it's evening out now, you know. I describe it as, you know, a lot of people have experienced a lot of highs and lows over the past couple of years.
Yeah.
I had a tendency for all of my life just to follow them, which I've recently learned is not ideal. You know, you're supposed to go through the middle of them and have a bit more consistency. And I'm doing that now. And it's, life is good, man. Life is really, really good. As ill as I am, I've just had like two of the happiest weeks of my life with my daughter. We just moved flat. We had Christmas. We had the family round. Very wholesome. It was good.
Oh, that's great, mate. That's lovely to hear. Well, I don't want to sort of dredge up any ill feeling, but for somebody the Frank that I've seen on stage is somebody that clearly thrives off of that live thing. And how did you find lockdown? You know, just that not being able to do what you do.
Yeah, it was a nightmare. It was genuine. I mean, it was a bit more complicated for me as well, because I signed a lease for a new business in March 2020.
Oh, man.
We were closed 2 weeks later, and it took 3 years to sort of get it to stabilize and to try and sort of mitigate the damage that had been done by committing to that and, you know, pouring all my money into it, basically. So that, you know, through that, and obviously with the, you know, touring disappeared overnight, it was much harder to get into a room with your friends and just write music. And it was such a strange situation, because we just sold out Alexandra Palace. And we were just, you know, as far as momentum was going, we were flying it. All of that is gone. You know, the momentum just falls out of it. We're really lucky that we got to that plateau, because I know a few of our sort of peer bands didn't play that gig. They were scheduled to play that gig. They didn't get to play it. And so I've watched us all sort of scramble once gigs were back to get back out there and build it up. But yeah, in that time, I discovered the wrong kind of coping mechanisms as well. So I've been dealing with that, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, that sort of stuff, it compounds itself. And if you're not a happy person in yourself, it's just, it quickly becomes chaos. But I'm in a really good place. I've been sober now 15 months. And
oh, well done, mate.
Yeah, just feeling really, really good, really like back on track, better than ever. So I'm excited, man. I'm good.
Wonderful. Been good,
like I said, dramatic.
Let's talk records.
Yeah.
Frank, tell me the song that you think has the greatest ever intro.
it's a song, you know, this could have fit into two spaces as well, because I nearly put this as number seven. Which was like the song that many may not know that I wanted them to hear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Amazing Snakeheads are a band that have just been a forever inspiration for me since they came onto the scene. They're just, you know, collective, just really passionate musicians that were all amazing at what they did, and they just, I know it's not, I know there's a lot of effort involved, but they made it look effortless. You know, it just, and sonically, you could be listening to, you know, some sort of long lost tapes of Ennio Morricone at points. Like, it's just, if you want to talk atmosphere on a record, the record Amphetamine Ballads just has it in. It's crazy. It's, so, and this is, this song, Here It Comes Again, has like the longest, slowest, like sludgiest but grooviest, bluesy, just it, like it really paints like quite a scene. And we used to have this in our pre-show playlist, which is when you put it on, you might be like, where are they going with this? But
yeah, a
couple of minutes in, you understand why. So it's that for me. Yeah, see, Here It Comes Again by the Amazing Snakeheads.
Are they no more, Frank? Because I've not seen or heard anything of them for a long time.
No, yeah, you wouldn't have. They're not anymore. Unfortunately, the singer passed away.
Oh my God!
Dale passed away. He had a brain tumor, I believe. There's an amazing documentary about them on it was on iPlayer, I think. But it was tough. That was like really, really hard. To watch happen, you know, like he touched a lot of people.
Yeah,
incredible musician. So, and I forever just think that they're like, they're, it's one of those like legendary, mythical stories in music, you know, because it all happened in a moment.
Yeah.
Dale Barclay. He's a hero of mine.
Forever. Yeah. Did you get to play with him?
Never played with them. No, we crossed paths for other people, like always close, but never quite.
Because it felt like they blew up around the same time as you.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, but
they
it's one of those things where very early on I kind of latched onto the sound and just never wanted to meet them. I was so scared.
And they looked cool as fuck, didn't they?
Yeah, like cowboys. They're nice. And this is what I mean, though. They're just pure inspiration, you know. It was funny. I went and saw the Arctic Monkeys play at the Arsenal Stadium, and it was like, I'm there watching, like, you know, we saw the Mysterines, who were fucking amazing. We watched the Hives, like, and then just before the Arctics come on, there's just. Like Amazing Snakeheads in the playlist, and I was just like blown away. I just thought, yeah, I know. I knew you're listening to this as well before you go on stage. Just the best.
Wonderful. Frank, I want to sort of talk to you about the power of the intro and also the kind of thought process that goes into it when you're creating, because we're seeing, I guess maybe with more sort of commercial pop music, we're seeing like the influence of things like TikTok and kind of factoring into records getting more exposure.
Yeah.
And we're seeing, I guess, with the more sort of commercial pop producers almost trying to use a science to create the perfect, you know, 3-minute pop record. And more so than ever, I guess, because radio play, which, you know, in my time in bands was all about getting on, you know, trying to get on Le Mac show or whatever it was back then. And now there seems to be a lot of kind of pressure to get on Spotify playlists of, you know, by certain outfits. All of these things, I guess, in a world where Spotify is saturated with so many bands and you've got to try and get your band noticed, does any of them kind of trends that are happening filter through into your creative process at all, Frank?
No.
I didn't think it would.
We're not really a trends kind of band. I'm certainly not a trend kind of artist. Like, it gets brought up every now and again in a meeting. You know, they'll just say TikTok, and I only have to give them a look. they know to not bring it up again for at least a month. You know. It's not for me. It's and that's okay. I mean, Rattlesnakes are on TikTok. We've got, you know, a social media company that it takes, we give them stuff that we find interesting, and we're like, yeah, look, try and make something out of this, because this is cool and it's real and it's true to us. Good luck type thing.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things, you can't, you know, the trends and that, you can try and jump on it, but then you just, you're already working from behind. And that's not where you want to be. You want to be ahead. You know? So
where would you sit when the labels start suggesting like edits and stuff like that?
Yeah, I'm always keen to hear them. I think it's really interesting to hear edits, and especially like given different people's perspective, you sort of, you know, first thing is like, okay, what are you going to cut? That's what out of this song didn't resonate with you, or do you feel is surplus to demand? So that's always interesting to get, like, if anything, it's a good idea to like get to know your team. It's a bit of a criminal way of getting understanding data collection. Like, oh right. but for me, it's one of those things where it's important. It's important. Like, for example, we got amazing radio plugger in America who, you know, wanted to work with our band for a long time. And he sent us a cut through the other day of a new single. And it was quite brutal, you know, quite savage, cut out the whole middle eight, and quite a brutal cut. But, you know, he explained it to us. He said, look, honestly, I love this song as it is, but I know for what we're trying to achieve at radio, needs to be shorter, it needs to be punchier, and you need to get straight back to that hook, and this is why I've done this. It is bold, but you know, when someone comes to me that knows their job, I'm like, cool, like, you know, the song is still going to go on the record, it's still going to go up on DSPs. This is for radio.
Yeah,
radio is a different beast. You already said it, you know, it's a different entity. You're always trying to get onto one show or position yourself somewhere. How can you do that across the board, you know?
I'm going to ask you for track two, Frank, to tell me about the first song that you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you.
Yeah, there's right. I put down one, but there was many. This could have been 15 songs. Seriously, like it was so many. But the one that had the longest sort of lasting effect is God Only Knows by the Beach Boys. I love
do it, won't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I've loved this song for such a long time, and I don't know if there's a better way to say I don't have the words to tell you what you mean to me. Do you know what I mean? So as far as like a love song goes, that's about proclaiming your love for someone and not being able to find the way to do that. They just did it so perfectly. And, you know, I still listen to that song. I think about my daughter. I think about my family. It depends where I'm at in life. But that song can come on and really, like, you know, bring me to my knees type thing. Yeah. It has the power to do that. So it's one of those. I don't know if people feel. I'd like to think the world feels songs the way I feel them.
But don't you find if you get a new song that you hear that you just think, oh my God, this has just absolutely broke me in half. This is unbelievable. And you play it to someone and they don't respond like that. It kills me. I just think, huh?
Yeah. I don't really bother anymore because of that risk. I'm like, oh, it's too. there was a period in my life where I could not listen to The Sky Is a Neighborhood by the Foo Fighters.
Yeah.
I couldn't listen to it. Like, every time I did, I'd be like bawling my eyes out before the end of the track. So and that goes in waves. Like, God Only Knows does that to me still yeah. Now but yeah,
what's the emotion, if you've got a pinpoint it?
Longing, like hope, and like a desire, a deep want to be that for someone else, you know?
Yeah.
To be that important for someone else, like,
yeah.
To feel like, you know, love, really. That's ultimately what it boils down to, is just love. That is very core. And I really believe that they just found the words.
Yeah, absolutely. Have you ever seen him perform that?
No, I mean, I've got some live records of it. It's like,
Yeah.
listen in the dark, you know, with the candles on. But it's yeah, I'd be scared to see it, you know.
Oh, mate, I'll tell you what, I live in Essex, and he came to Southend, and for some reason, he came to Cliff Pavilion in Southend about 6 years ago and to play Pet Sounds in its entirety.
Wow.
And it was him and Al Jardine, and I think it was like maybe one of Al Jardine's kids. It was obviously Brian Wilson. He's got the best band of session musicians on the planet, but they all just disappeared. And the room was essentially full up with people my age, 50 plus. And he just sat at a piano and he went, "I'm going to play one for you on my own." And like, as much as he's probably said that a million times, and you just think, oh, he's just churning out the hits, it didn't matter because him at a piano, his voice was breaking a bit. And I looked around, and there must have been 3,000 men in their 50s, 60s. Bottom lips were all over the place everywhere you looked. It was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen
Absolutely.
or heard, Frank. It was amazing. That record will just cut you in half every time. What a song. I mean, them early days of hearing the Beach Boys and stuff was home musical when you was a little 'un.
It was, yeah. My dad was growing up, like when he was younger, he was a DJ, so he had a lot of like, and he's a real tech head, you know, like he's got all the latest stuff. So I had a big record collection, but really, like he was born in the 60s, like grew up through the 70s. So when CDs came about, he had it all. He had it all. Like it was mad to me to watch. Like when I think back now, like just there's no way that could. I thought that was just regular in everyone's house, having like 2,000 albums on the walls
Man.
stacked up in. And so there was everything there, like, you know, from the Beach Boys to Dire Straits to like Madness, all the way through, like anything that was good was in there, you know. Even punk rock, like Sex Pistols, Sham 69, like he had it all. But he just and I remember those like long drives. My brothers and me, we've got a playlist, which is the dad playlist, which is basically loads of like 70s, 80s, 90s classics that he used to just put on a mix CD when we'd go on holidays. And my brother texted us all the other day, and he was like, "I've just driven back from London. It's taken 4 hours, but the dad playlist got me through." Nice.
Fantastic. Oh, I love that. I mean, how sort of obsessive was you with music then? Like, would you hear that opening track on Brothers in Arms and go, "Fuck, this is mental. This is like huge." Or would you hear Madness and like and would the lyrics and the kind of sort of working class principles that are being sung about on tracks like Embarrassment, would that resonate with you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, probably not like so many of the political aspects of it. I was young, you know. But the melodies, the lyrics.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm. Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Like, you know, I might not have understood it all, but I knew them heart by heart. And it's really funny because I when I would be driving around my daughter, for whatever reason, that's what I would go to towards. Yeah. You know, I would lean on those tracks. I don't know whether it was like a passing it down thing or that was just comfortable. And then sometimes I'd put a song on and I'd play it, and halfway through I'd be turning it off. Like, what the fuck was... Why was he playing that to us when we were fucking seven? Do you know what I mean? You know, he didn't mean anything by it, but, you know, lyrically it was much looser back then. And that's rich coming from me, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, my daughter, she loves Madness, man. I would put that on and just dance around the house to it. And so it's, I think it had a profound impact on me. It really did. So
I think Madness are criminally underrated, Frank. I think, you know, the amount of incredible singles they released and the impact that they've had on so many people and the way that people, you know, constantly reference, you know, the Ian Dury and the Kinks and stuff like that. I think Madness were nailing that. And it feels that they never get kind of mentioned in them kind of conversations. Do you know what I mean?
I do. I think there's this bit of this curse where it's availability, accessibility. You can still see Madness. We played a show not long ago, a few years ago in Cologne, and they were playing in the venue over the road, and we had access because of our tickets. So we finished our gig and then we went and watched Madness. It was fucking great. Like, yeah. They're brilliant, you know, live. They're a phenomenal band. So it was, I think, you know, as you get older, if you're still available to people, there becomes this sort of, you miss that. Sadly, I don't know, it's harder to swallow the legendary thing. It's really sad, like, that the musicians and artists and rock stars have to die before they get paid their dues. I'm very much of the school where I text people all the time. I DM artists all the time who I like, and I'll just send them like a flower emoji, and I'm like, these are flowers, this song is amazing, like, this is what touched me about it. Or this, you know, I text Joe from the Idols the other day. I heard that new song, Grace.
Oh, man, how good's that?
I texted it. I was like, what a performance. Where the fuck did that, where's that come from? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I believe that it's important to tell people while they're here, like, this is how special you are. Not just to me, but to everybody. And I'll continue doing that forever. Like, it's, you know, I feel really lucky when people go out of their way in their day to tell me, you know, your music's helped shape me or save me at some point. Like, that's special.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we're talking formative years, so I'm going to ask you for track three, Frank, to tell me the song that reminds you of your time at school, please, mate.
It's funny because this went, I have multiples for all of this, right? Like, this was a hard list to put together for you.
Good.
But the one that was... really stuck out for me was Firestarter by The Prodigy. And I had that album, Fat of the Land, came to me randomly through one of my dad's friends, actually, who was just, you know, be around or whatever. And he was like, oh, you've got to listen to this song. And he showed me the cover of it. And I just remember being like, what is this? Like, giant crab. Like, and I took it and it just, I'd never heard anything like it. You know, I'd never heard anything like it. I'd never heard, like, the speed of it, the aggression, the, like, it drops down to complete softness. And I'd also never really heard, like, such multicultural music infused in on one record. You know, it was really, really eye opening. For about 2 years, like that's, I had a Walkman, you know, a Discman. It was like steel blue, and that was the only CD in there. That was it. So I just listened to that day in, day out. And it's funny because we just played a festival with them like last summer. And it's just, they are phenomenal vibe. You know, like still to this moment, they are really putting it out there. And it's incredible to watch. Like it's you know, obviously sad and pretty heartbreaking at times. But it's also really nice to see how they pay honor to Keith, you know, in their live set. And that was really special. That choked me up as well when I saw it. It was brutal. So
yeah, we're fiercely proud of them here in Essex, mate. They're our heroes, mate.
Oh, you should be.
And I think, like, you know, when people talk about these huge hip hop producers and the legendary status that they have, Liam fucking Howlett, man. Like that Fat of the Land, no one made beats like that until then. And like, I remember hearing Diesel Power for the first time, and it was like, what the fuck's this come from? This is insane, like huge. Yeah. And like,
do you know what it is? I've described them like this before, but it sounds illegal.
That's great.
You know what I mean? Yeah. You had to like give me one word to sum up Prodigy, it's like illegal. It just sounds like it's, you know. It's those field raves that you heard about, but you never got invited to. It's like a fucking speaker in the boot of your car. Like, do you know what I mean? It's somehow jumping in and nicking a police car. You know, like it's just that record and that sound is just just on the edge.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, how did you find school? Did you enjoy it?
I loved it. Yeah, I did. I mean, it was, you know, I look back on it and I can say that I enjoyed it. Now I had great teachers.
Yeah,
you know, I struggled with sort of lining up with what was expected of me, and you know, amongst my peers, I was a small kid. I was bright ginger hair, and I was tiny. You know, so I was like a bit of a target. You know, and I got bullied a fair bit, but you know, I that stuff, for it shapes you. You know, you can let it break you, or you can let it shape you, and it definitely shaped me. But I was really lucky. I was really lucky with the school that I went to. I had an amazing art teacher. I had an amazing, amazing English teacher. I had an amazing music teacher, but I didn't study music. I just ended up turning up, you know, singing really badly out of tune in the rehearsal rooms over lunch and stuff, because I just really wanted to perform, but I just didn't really have it in me. So
yeah.
But they were amazing, amazing people that all really shaped my life.
Where did that confidence come from then, Frank? Because, you know, you spoke about being at school and being bullied and stuff and you know, and being in the music room but not quite ticking the Mariah Carey boxes, and but you wanted to perform. Where did I won't say character, but where did that person come from that I've seen on stage multiple times that looks like you're conducting the fucking crowd with ease?
Yeah. I think he's always been in there, you know. I don't know when it really sort of came about. I feel now I'm better at it than I've ever been in my life. Like I walk on stage now and I'm not scared. I feel like that's where I'm supposed to be. You know, in Gallows, it was a bit harder. I found it much more of a struggle at times, but that whole output was much more aggressive. You know, it had violence as a foundation, so that was difficult. The confidence comes from growing, from years of experience and doing and weathering those storms. I don't know whether it was confidence at the beginning. I think it was blind sort of faith, you know, just hope and stubbornness in the very beginning, you know. Like, it just, I'm a Taurus, so
easy. You and me both, brother.
Yeah, dig your heels in and get it done, do you know what I mean?
Okay. I want you to tell me, please, for track four, the first song you remember buying from a record shop, please, mate.
Right. So, again, it's multiples, and I'll tell you the other one in a minute because it's great. But the first one I got was the album Dookie, and the song was Basket Case, and that comes from being in those rehearsal rooms and desperately trying to sing those songs, you know, in our first ever covers band. I mean, when you think back about punk, you can go much deeper and you can go into, you know, that burgeoning scene that we had in the UK that was so important and that set fire to the world. But I wasn't looking at that at that time. You know, that was a bit too ahead of me, and it was too linked to sort of, I guess, like older cousins or uncles that were just a bit rough around the edges, that were like, you know, like that's their sort of tune. Like, this is a bit softer, a bit more American, and it had a bit more, much more melody. But it was born out of all of that Operation Ivy stuff. So that record, the record Dookie and then Nimrod that came afterwards, like, yeah, Basket Case was just such a tune.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think with Dookie as well, I remember when I bought that, just sitting there, because I bought it on vinyl because I'm old, like the just hours just sat staring at that cover, just thinking, this is fucking great. Yeah. And I think that's my only, without kind of moving into sort of, you know, granddad territory, that's one of the things I feel is a little bit lost in the fact that so much music is digital now, that you don't really get to appreciate them iconic album sleeves. And you ever pick up them books of like the greatest album sleeves ever, none of them are kind of post 2010, you know, most of them are like 90s, 80s, 70s. And I do feel that like Dookie was one of them that I just remember coming at the same time as like Nevermind and all of these kind of amazing sleeves, just like devouring them. And that's the only thing I feel is a little bit lost now. Do you know what I mean?
I do. I mean, the art is so important to us. Like, you know, being an artist and being a musician, like we spend a lot of time on the cover art, and, you know, we've tried to make it interactive in the past. We've tried to, but it's, I know exactly what you mean. Dookie just had that look was of a time. It was so sad, like it was so East, like West Coast America as well. So skate punk, and it just, yeah, it was like it was pure Gilman Street, that whole thing. I love it.
Well, you alluded to there being another one, so you've got a cool choice here. Tell me the other one's not quite so cool.
No, the other ones, it would have been a bit later, but one of the first records I really remember purchasing was I stormed down to get it, you know, like left school at lunchtime to go and get my copy. And that was White Pony by the Deftones.
Oh,
I just remember being like, and I got in there and they had these import versions only. Yeah, they had a solid red case and a solid black case that was opaque, so you couldn't see the fucking artwork. And on the back, it didn't have a track listing. It just had the times. And I was like, it blew my fucking mind. I was like, it's got the sticker on it. It says it's the album. I remember taking it to the front desk, and the guy was like, yeah, we don't know why, but this is what it is. You can have the red one or the black one. I was like, is there different songs on it? Is there, like, what does it mean? You know, in the end, I think I bought both and gave one to my brother. And that record became really, really important to me and Steph. Like, I remember going to see them, and it was at the Kentish Town Forum, like just a few years later. And, It was one of the best gigs I've ever seen in my life, right? And then just a couple of years ago, they did that 20-year reunion at the Kentish Town Forum. And it's the only time in my life I've emailed everyone I know. I'm like, who the fuck can get me into this gig? Like, I don't care. Like, I never ask for this. I never ask for favors. I cannot miss this show. Do you know what I mean? Like, and so I went with my brothers. And I remember being up in the balcony and watching it and just like loving every second of it. And then, yeah, they started playing Be Quiet and Drive. And I was just gone, man, shirt off in the pit. Like, just fucking, I come to, like, in the middle of a mosh pit in Kentish Town Forum, almost 40, just like, I remember seeing, like, so many kids next to me, like, what the fuck are you doing here? And I'm like,
living my best life, lads.
Literally. Like,
that record, man, like, yeah, I weren't a big fan of nu metal and lots of the bands that kind of come around that time, because I guess I was a lot older than you. But when fucking Deftones come out, it was like, oh, this is different. This isn't Limp Bizkit and Papa Roach. This is different. And then when White Pony come out, I remember just getting that home and putting that on and hearing like Digital Bath, and it was like, oh, holy shit. And then it's like, oh man, I've done a track with Tool. And then I heard Passenger and I was like, where the fuck are they getting this from? It's unreal. And then when they put out, was it Minerva?
Yeah.
It was like, fuck me, Deftones, they're smashing shoegaze now as well. They can do that. Like, it's incredible.
It's like, always been in there. I remember seeing them like early on, like they did a cover of a Sade song.
Yeah, they done like, No Ordinary Love, didn't they?
Yeah, and I listened to it. And it was beautiful.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I just remember thinking, like, man, this is it's crazy.
Oh, they're solid choices, mate. Solid choices. Tell me about the song that soundtracked your years going clubbing. And Frank, that can be your local bar that had a good jukebox. That can be your rock club. That can be whatever you want it to be.
Exactly. That's when I saw this, I was like, well, I'm going to put the song that I was going clubbing to.
Yeah.
But it probably isn't what we would class as clubbing. But it was, when I was young, the only clubbing I really did was to a rock club.
Yeah.
Which was once every month down at the Pavilion and in Hemel Hempstead. And it was a bit of a risk to go to, do you know what I mean? Because you'd go and sort of basically, back then it was much more tribal. You know, the youth was much more divided. And kind of everyone else knew that's where all the rockers were going to be for one night. So it was quite often you'd go down there and you'd come out and then get beaten up. The song always that they would finish the night with was Killing in the Name of by Rage Against the Machine, which obviously I love that band. Yeah, I grew up on that band. I've seen them live countless times. I'm enamored with them. We got to play randomly. We played a show with Prophets of Rage. One summer we played at a festival called Resurrection in Spain. It was an amazing festival. And we played on the main stage and just had a great time. You know, we were buzzing. The show was great. We were watching Prophets of Rage. And they start playing Balls on Parade. And I just got in the crowd again. I just was like, I gave all my stuff to my girlfriend at the time. I was like, look, got to hold this. I'm sorry, I'm off. And got in the pit. And I end up getting I'm in this mosh pit with a bunch of Spanish kids that are just, and they love rock music in a different way. I don't know if you've ever been to Spain, like they just are what it is, but they're just really they see me and they see that I've just been on stage and now I'm in the pit and they just lift me up and I'm like, fuck, like I'm stood on top of this crowd, like trying not to like listen to Balls on Parade. I've got like the best seat in the house. And then Tom like sees me and is just like, oh yo, like, and I'm like, yeah, sorry, like I'll get down. And I tried to get down and went over the thing. The next thing I know is Tom's on the fucking mic, like, no, get him up here. And I was just like, no, I just was freaking out. I was like, no, it's cool. I'm sorry. Like, I just like the band, you know? He's like, no, come up here. And out of nowhere, his security just picks me up. Like, at that point, I have no option. I'm going on the stage. I'm like 5'7". Like, do you know what I mean? Just getting carried. And he puts me on the stage. And Tom just goes, yeah, you'll know the words to this one. Just try and keep up. And put the fucking mic in my hand and I look at the set list and it's Killing in the Name of.
Fuck off. Really?
Yeah.
Mate.
I fucked the lyrics up still. I was so shook. But there's a video of it on YouTube. And if you ever watch it, like, you will just see that is me. Like, that's pure joy. That's like a moment in my life that I would never, ever thought would happen. And so anyway, I'm in the middle of it and I turn around at one point, it's fucking Brad Wilk, Timmy Comerford and Tom Morello. And then there's fucking Be Real and Chuck D just laughing at me like, who the fuck is, because I just went off. I was like, fuck it. This is my, I'm having this. Like, and I turn around at one point and they're all just there laughing, beaming. And I just thought, I cannot be on this stage when this song finishes. I don't know what it was, but I just was like, I cannot be up there for that. And so I just fucking jumped, but it's the biggest hole like that I've ever made. It was there's a photo of it and I'm just doing a proper Superman all the way over. My daughter still laughs at that picture. She's like, that is so silly, Dada. I'm like, yeah, it was a bit. Yeah,
good mate story. I mean, I like to ask guests about imposter syndrome and do you ever get it? And I mean, fuck me, if you're looking at Rage, Chuck, Be Real. If you're ever going to get it, that's probably the moment.
But that was what happened. All of a sudden, I was just like, can't fucking be here anymore. 5'7", ginger kid from Hearts. I'm off.
That's fantastic, mate. What a story. Well, look, you mentioned Hearts. Let's move on to track 6, and I'm going to take you home for this one. And it's the favourite song from an artist from your home county, please, Frank.
Yeah. I had a lot of choice in this. There's a lot of amazing musicians from Hearts, and we can talk all about the stories of the bands that I grew up around and got to watch play and book shows for. But the track that stands out for me is by one of arguably one of the greatest performers, greatest singers, greatest songwriters of all time, which is George Michael. So I picked Faith because it's a beautiful song. I nearly went with the Limp Bizkit version because that had an important place in my heart while I was growing up. But I chose George Michael's version of Faith, and yeah, it's just, I mean, lyrically it's incredible, and performance wise, any time I listen to his music, there's just so much in it. There's so much depth actually happening in those performances, and it's something that I strive for often, like to try and have that kind of control and that kind of, like I said, depth over my voice is just, it's really, really special when you hear someone that has a grasp of it like that. And he just did, like, it was wild.
Did you watch the Wham documentary on Netflix that came out last year?
No, I didn't. I didn't see it.
Oh, mate. I mean, I love George Michael's sort of solo. It's like Listen Without Prejudice, man. That record's fucking ridiculous. And I wasn't the biggest Wham fan, but that documentary showcasing, like, there's like pictures and recordings of him writing Careless Whisper when they're like 12 or 13, just sitting there in their bedroom recording it on tapes. And he's like, he just sat on that song until he was like, oh, do you know, I'm going to do something with that. And it just documents their rise to becoming arguably one of the biggest bands in the world at that point. It's fantastic. And the loyalty between them, where it gets to the point where Andrew Ridgely realizes he's surplus to this. It's all about George. And he's just like, mate, just you go and do your thing, man. I've had the best ride. It's beautiful. It's really lovely. And and it just reminds you of just like an insane talent that he was, like, and just a ridiculous voice. And just seemed like a really fucking good egg as well, man.
That's all I remember when he passed. Like, it was such a strange thing, but there was just countless, like, random sort of like testimonials of like, yeah, he, you know, he of just acts of charity from him, but to specific people that have either reached out or we heard about their story or they couldn't, you know, like, it was just a wildly charitable person, you know. That's just the beautiful thing when you realize that, you know, someone's made that kind of level of success, but they still really, what they want to do is just make people happy. That's beautiful.
Just tell me a little bit about that scene in Hearts, in your sort of formative years of playing. Like, what was that like, and who were, you know, who was you playing with, and what venues?
It's not small. Can't tell you a small bit. It's crazy. Now when I look back on it, you know, it started for me with a band called Sick.
They were like, oh man, yeah,
tech metal band that were just phenomenal. And they were playing with bands like Incoherence and Cry for Silence and My Dad Joe. And that was what happened. It was called NAM. It was called New Age Metal, and it was happened at Watford Rugby Club, and it was just this tiny little box where we would go every week, make this pilgrimage to Watford, and just see all these bands. And then, you know, I was in a band at the time, but I couldn't really get gigs. So I started putting on shows in Boxmoor, in Hemel Hempstead, at the Arts Centre. And that's where I put on shows for my bands that sort of predated. And I would book the bands that I loved. Like, I'd pay for My Dad Joe to come, or I'd pay for Six, you know, and I remember booking a show for Enter Shikari at one point, you know. Like, it's, but it's really funny because now I look back on that, and you've got, you know, Sixth have just so many members that are just doing important things. Like some of them have gone on to become like incredible producers.
Yeah. You know? Was it the bass player that became a producer?
No, I think it was one of the guitarists, but the bass player, James, is now, feel like it's with Devin Townsend,
right?
Like, touring with Devin Townsend, and then you've got like Incoherence that had Dan Mumford was playing bass for Incoherence. He went on to draw every single thing ever for bands at one point. He did the artwork for Gallows for all the Wolves, you know. Then you've got like Kev that was in Incoherence. He went on to become Paloma Faith's pianist. You know, and then you've got like, you know, Alex Venturella, V-Man, who went on to he's now playing in Slipknot.
Yeah.
You know, it's there's so many people there from that scene. And we were playing in St. Albans, a little venue called The Pioneer. We were playing, what was that other one up on the hill?
Horn.
Fuck, I was there. Man, I've put so many holes in that ceiling. I really have. Like, sorry,
that's
guys.
Shutting down, I think. I think that's one of the ones that's going. Yeah, which is such a shame. I think, am I right in saying, I think that was Enter Shikari's stomping ground, that one. And,
yeah,
and I think
the Pioneer, for sure, yeah. I remember seeing them at the Pioneer a few times.
And the Subways, I think, kind of come through there as well.
Yeah, and Gallows, you know, we played our first gig there.
Oh, really?
Yes, and that's the thing, is like, that's where I met Laurent. Like, he was in the band My Dad Joe. They were a punk band. And he come through. I booked them to play, and my band opened up. And years later, he just sort of messaged me out of the blue, like, hey, I've got your number, and I just wanted to see if you wanted to do something. I remember we played a gig, and you had the right sort of energy. And I was like, yeah, I'm in, 100%. And that was it. My life changed from that moment on. It's mad.
Love it. Love it. Last track, Frank. A song that you think many people may not know that you would like them to hear, please.
Yeah, this is my coffee music. This is like in the morning, I put this on while the sun's coming up, and I just think about life. And it got me through. I mean, I hope everybody knows who this is already. And if you don't, it's just a beautiful, beautiful record. But the song is called If Words Were Flowers, and it's from the same record, and it's by a guy called Curtis Harding. I don't know why I picked this, but it just, it's a record that is like, you know, that's that song specifically, it meant a lot to me for a time where I was really trying to reconnect with myself. And I love a record that, you know, like I just said, it's my coffee music. You know, I put it on in the morning, I listen and I watch the sun come up. But equally, you can, that record can be listened to at any point in the day and it has the same vibe. So any record that you can have a similar moment to at 3 in the morning or 10 in the morning is like, that's when you really know that they've done something magical. And so, yeah, I would say listen to that. If Words for Flowers is the gateway drug, but the album is phenomenal. So it's a beautiful piece of music.
Frank, we make it easy for people to do that because we put together a little Spotify playlist with all the tracks that we've spoken about today. And obviously we'll put your music on there as well so people can go and explore that. Looking ahead, we're recording this very early doors in 2024. What can people expect from you, mate?
Busy. We've got a new album coming out at the end of this month. I can't wait. I'm really proud of it. And it's, we've got a tour as soon as it comes out. We're literally on tour 2 weeks later. So I don't think it's ever fallen like that for us. It's, that's pretty exciting. So I think everyone will be getting their teeth into it. So yeah, we're just a lot of touring, a lot more from the Rattlesnakes. Like, we're kind of doing a world tour up till June, and then we've got festivals all summer.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Frank, if people want to keep up the speed with kind of release dates and tour dates and stuff, where's the best place to keep up the speed?
The best place is the band Instagram, which is just And The Rattlesnakes, at And The Rattlesnakes. I'm just on Frank Carter 23. I've been on that forever. It's the number of chaos. But to be honest, these days, I'm like, I might cut that off. I need, what's the number for calm? So I need a slower pace. But those are the best places, like our Instagram and that. It's usually like we're churning out stuff on there all the time, so.
Wonderful. Frank, it's lovely to hear you in a really great place at the moment, mate. And thank you so much for coming on and having a lovely natter about records with us, mate. It's been really, really nice, man.
It's been great. We're playing the Roundhouse in Feb. If you want to come, I'd love to see you there. Like, two nights, so pick whichever's best for you and I'll sort it out.
Frank, I'm going to grab my mate from around the corner, Mr. Scroobius Pip, and we'll come down to watch you.
Yeah, it'd be great. Lovely.
I told him he was on today. He was like, say hello, mate. Oh, Frank, I'm going to love you and leave you. Thank you so much, mate, and I will see you in London, mate.
Take it easy, pal.
Thanks loads, mate. Cheers, bye. Frank. Bye-bye. There you have it, Frank Carter. What an absolute ledge. Oh, such a nice guy. That Profits a Raid story, absolutely fantastic. Go check out Frank's first appearance on the podcast a fair few years ago now. Go get stuck into that back catalogue. Why not become a Patreon? Do you know how long it's been since I've recorded one of these? It was way before Christmas, so I'm a bit rusty. And so what I forgot to do at the beginning was some thank yous. So I'm going to get them in there. I want to thank the team at Blue Murder Club Podcast that produced this. Go check them out. It's a fantastic true crime podcast. And you'll recognise some of the guests over there as well because they've been on this podcast. Thanks to Screwpip, everyone at the Distraction Pieces Network. And the biggest thanks always go to you lot for listening, loving and supporting this pod. And just being fucking top eggs. So thanks loads, man. We're back next time. In the meantime, be nice to each other, and I will see you soon. Bye-bye.